This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. There was quite a buzz among WMRA Land classical music lovers when the Heifetz International Music Institute moved its complete program to Mary Baldwin College for the 2012 season. The Heifetz involved in the institute is retired concert violinist Daniel Heifetz, who grew up in a rather notorious zip code, Beverly Hills 90210.
We were surrounded by a lot of excess, and my parents were very careful to keep our feet on the ground. My father is a neurosurgeon, and it was very interesting growing up in that community. Because we grew up in that community.
Now, wait a minute. Don't say something like that, and then don't say, what was interesting about it?
Well, because it was, you know, associated with Hollywood, I was very precocious as a kid who played the violin, and people wanted to put me on television from the age of 10, and my parents told everyone to get lost. They said, we want Danny to have a normal childhood, to grow up as a regular kid. If he becomes a musician, fine. If not, fine. The most important thing is to have that kind of a foundation, and I thank them for that. Or else I would not have been the person that someone like my wife would have married. So I went to the public schools and started the Los Angeles Conservatory of Music when I was 12, but I would go half day to school and half day to the conservatory. People told my parents to pull me out of school, have private tutors, and to put me on television, and none of that happened. And so when I was a junior in high school at Beverly High, I was becoming frustrated with the fact that, you know, I could play something slowly and really make an impact, you know, emotional impact, but I had never practiced enough to really have mastery of the instrument. So even though I thought I'd probably become a doctor like my father, I decided to audition for the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia when I was 16.
Let me stop for just a second. You're at 16, and you're recognizing that you don't have mastery of the instrument.
Right, because I never practiced that much.
Did that come from listening to people who did have it?
Well, combination. You know, I would listen to recordings, and I knew where my deficiencies were technically on the instrument. And at that point, I was never practicing more than maybe 1 or 2 hours a day.
And what were your deficiencies that you remember?
Well, the acrobatic mastery of the fingerboard of the instrument. I could play something slowly and make you cry, but that kind of mastery takes hours and hours from a young age. And so I auditioned for the Curtis Institute, and I chose that to audition for rather than Juilliard in New York, because Juilliard, you could pay tuition. Curtis was all scholarship. Outside of the Moscow Conservatory, the Curtis Institute is the most selective conservatory in the world to go to. So I figured that would be a perfect test of my abilities. And so I flew out there when I was 16 and auditioned. And the head of the Institute of Curtis at that time was Ephraim Zimbalist, the father of the actor Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. And I went with the attitude of, this is great. I'll play. I don't care if I get in. I'm sure I won't get in. And then I can just go back to Beverly High, graduate the following year, go to UCLA and become a doctor.
And be a doctor.
So I auditioned at the Curtis, and the norm would be that a few weeks later you would get a letter whether or not you were accepted. So I had played my audition. I went back to the hotel, and I got a call an hour later, would you come back, Daniel, and Mr. Zimbalist would like to see you. I didn't know what that meant, so I went back with my violin.
Did you have a suspicion what that
meant? I had a suspicion, and I walked into Zimbalist's studio. Now, remember, Zimbalist's teacher was Leopold Auer, who was a friend of Tchaikovsky. I mean, this was very historic, such a person like that. And Zimbalist asked me to play again, and he sat down at the piano and accompanied me, and he was one of the world's great violinists, who also was a fantastic pianist. So I played again the things that I auditioned for earlier, and he got up from the piano and he said, Daniel, would you like to be my student? And I said, yes, Mr. Zimbalist. And he said, would you like to come to my summer home in Maine before school starts and work with me privately? I couldn't believe it. I said, of course.
Did you remember anything about being a doctor at this point?
What happened was that I thanked him. I ran to the hotel. Never forget, picked up the phone, called my parents back in Los Angeles. I remember the maid was in the room cleaning up, and I started crying, saying, Mom, Dad, I was accepted. I'm coming to Curtis. My whole life is changing direction. I thought I was going to go back and be a doctor, and all of a sudden, I realized, gee, maybe I have enough potential to become a concert violinist. So at the age of 16, my life completely changed. That summer, I flew to Maine, started working with Zimbalist, and then moved to Philadelphia in the fall. And I finished my senior year of high school while I was at the conservatory, and then stayed for 4 more years. Zimbalist retired. I continued with a great violin pedagogue, Ivan Galamian, who was also the teacher of Itzhak Perlman and Pinka Zuckerman, and all of us in the same kind of group. And then he was the great teacher who understood when to kick the student out of the nest. And against my wishes, he forced me to audition for a major national violin competition called the Meriwether Post Competition, Washington, D.C. I had never played with an orchestra before that. And
I never.
No, I had no experience. I just practiced. And I made it to the finals. And the final competition was with the National Symphony Orchestra, with me and one other violinist. One of us was going to win. The other one was this amazing violinist. He's become very famous. He's Philip Setzer of the Emerson Quartet, which is the world's most famous string quartet. And I thought Phil was just amazing. And I called my parents and I said, don't fly out here. There's no way I'm going to win this. And so they didn't. I walk out on stage to play the Tchaikovsky Concerto with the National Symphony with the attitude, like with my audition, that, my God, Danny, this will be the only time I'll ever have an experience playing with an orchestra. So rather than being nervous, just go out and have fun. And so I did, and I won the competition.
Your acrobatic fingerboarding must have improved.
Well, listen, when I went to Curtis, I started practicing 8 hours a day.
Okay.
You see, what happened at that point is that what ignited in me was something that the legendary guitarist Andre Segovia told me. He called it the secret fire. And it started burning inside of me. And you know, in life, whatever you do in life, from anything, from a menial job to any profession, you hope that it's because you have that sacred fire to do whatever it is you're doing.
Daniel Heifetz's own sacred fire caught the attention of world-famous impresario Saul Hurok, who offered the 21-year-old a management contract.
I had an added thing on my head, which was, in fact, my name's Heifetz. Yasha Heifetz was the god of violin, the greatest violinist that ever lived, maybe except for Paganini. So to walk out on stage named Heifetz was an extra burden to carry.
And you are related?
Distant cousin. And so that made it even more of a responsibility, more of a sense of when I first met with Saul Hurok, he said, well, Danny, you're going to change your name. And I said, I really can't. I've always been Daniel Heifetz, you know, my family. And he said, well, just remember, you're going to have to work twice as hard and it'll take you twice as long. And so I started my career with that awareness. And at the beginning of my career, the reviews in the newspapers would say, Daniel Heifetz played beautifully, but if you remember how Yasha Heifetz played it. And so it was a real hard work, a lot of hard work. And then they started calling me the young Heifetz. Then they started calling me the other Heifetz. And then we got to the point in my career where they stopped mentioning it. Then I felt, okay, I've gone through the trials. Because I had my own statement to make, which was more about emotional communication in the music rather than the perfection and the acrobatics. I was able to connect the emotional response and with my energy projected over the footlights to the last person in the balcony. And that's what my artistry was about. And it's what set me apart from most of the other violinists, especially Yasha Heifetz. I always felt that there was great fire in his playing, but the aura of Heifetz was also the technical perfection. It's more important for me to play a passage going after something exciting, maybe missing a note, than being careful and playing it perfectly and not being connected to that excitement. And so that, I assume, enabled me to create my own name, even being called Heifetz. After I made my debut in New York, signed by the manager, the first year, an organization asked if they could hire me to play concerts in different cities in the great concert halls, but also in prisons. And up to that point, no one had ever taken classical music into a prison. And the first prison that I went into was the Tombs in Manhattan.
Wow.
So here I am, 22 years old. I walk into the social hall with my Stradivarius, with my pianist, two white kids, and all the prisoners were either African-American or Spanish-American, and the hostility was tremendous. I get to the front of the social hall where there was a kind of broken-down piano, and I could feel that this was not a cool scene. So I said, "Fellas, I'd like to play for you some soul music." And I heard them shuffling around, and one guy yelled out, "Yeah, great, man, yay, soul music." I said, "Nope. Not African-American soul music, not Spanish-American soul music, Jewish soul music." At which point, one of the black prisoners yelled out, "What the hell do the Jews know about soul music?" I said, "Okay, fellas, let me tell you something about myself." I said, "I'm Jewish, and my mother was born in Germany, and all of her relatives went to the gas chambers under Hitler." I said, "The music of one persecuted minority group can be related to by any other persecuted minority group." At which point that same black prisoner raised up his fist and yelled out, "Right on, brother." And I then proceeded to play this classical piece by Ernst Bloch, a Jewish composer, a piece based on a lot of the sounds from the ethnic Jewish experience. And these guys had tears in their eyes. They were crying. I then played some Brahms and some Ravel. They were standing and screaming. And the warden told me that it was a bigger reaction than when Johnny Cash had come into the prison a month earlier. Here I am at the beginning of my career, and it taught me the most important life-changing information, which was that you don't need any sophistication or educational background in classical music to get the message. If it's delivered on a basic level of human experience, guts, emotion, and enthusiasm, that set me on a course for my whole career, culminating in the Heifetz International Music Institute. So I analyzed, what do those of us who are able to make that magic, what is it about us? And I analyzed it down to five components of communication. Number one is voice. If you can't sing a piece, you really can't play it. And I don't give a damn what your voice sounds like. I don't care if you're singing the right notes. You have to sing and connect that with who you are as a person. So all the students take a week of singing lessons. And these are violin, viola, cello students who have never taken a voice lesson. But the goal is to be able to connect your voice to your heart. And then I realize it's also communication verbally. To walk out on a stage and to talk to an audience, seeing individuals, not just a mass of people. So I bring in somebody for a week of public speaking, not to worry so much about constructing a speech, but how to be willing to connect with a person verbally, in the eyes, look at an audience, reveal who you are, and to be able to tell an audience, why do I love this piece? What do I want you to enjoy about it? And why the hell should you buy a ticket to hear me play it? That begins the bond between the artist and the audience. Then I bring in a popular blues artist, which freaks out the uptight classical musicians.
I can imagine.
And he, Chick Streetman, a great blues pop artist, he's like a Pied Piper. He works with the musicians on, first of all, loving your own persona. Don't imitate a Daniel Heifetz or a Yo-Yo Ma or an Itzhak Perlman. Who you are is beautiful, glorious. Be willing to love it and to own it. And then to be willing to explore your creative potential. Experiment and go over the top to find out how you can tap into those emotions and that persona. So they take a week with, I call it, freedom of expression. The fourth week, I bring in a movement expert. How can you become comfortable in your own skin to understand how your body moves when you're expressing an emotion and how to make the instrument become a part of your body instead of a piece of wood? Very important, because if your body is a stiff physical vessel, the emotion cannot come through and the instrument stays a piece of wood instead of a breathing part of your body. Then the fifth and sixth week, I bring in a great drama person, a theater director, an actor. And this is the most difficult. Can you identify an emotion? Can you bring that emotion to the surface? Are you willing to reveal that emotion? And can you find the energy to project that revealed emotion through the instrument, through the music, across the footlights to the last person in the balcony? Incredibly difficult, but the ultimately most important thing. And so this communication training, this Heifetz performance communication training, is transformational. The kids come the first day they come to the Institute, and I've heard them all, either on DVD or in person, and I've selected from hundreds and hundreds from all over the world the 62 best. They have to have such a degree of advanced proficiency, so it's the best young players in the world. And the first day they arrive, I make them re-audition for me. And I stop the kid after 3 minutes. And I say, sing the piece for me. And the student looks at me like a deer in headlights. Mr. Heifetz, I can't sing it. I said, okay, fine. Would you please tell me what you're expressing? What emotion are you expressing? Why should I come hear you play it? Most of them haven't even thought about what they were trying to express of the piece they just played for me. And then I ask the crucial, most important thing. Would you please play a 2-octave ascending scale? Dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-da. Communicating the kind of joy and happiness that would make me and the audience want to smile. And they can't do it. They'll play it fast. They'll bounce their bow. They'll play different rhythms. But they cannot understand how to connect their own joy and happiness as a person to the stupid notes of a scale.
Could you do that at that age? Was that in you?
I had it naturally.
It was you. Okay.
Right. You know,
so you are teaching.
I'm teaching what I naturally had. That's what it's all about. It's who you are as a person.
You can hear the rest of my conversation with Daniel Heifetz, including the story of how his malformed funny bone has meant he's never had full use of his hands, on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Daniel Heifetz has mostly been retired from performance since 2000. But his sacred fire lives on in the music of the Heifetz International Institute at Mary Baldwin College, of which you've heard snippets during this piece. And you can hear a whole lot more of this beautiful music at 7 p.m. next Tuesday on WMRA's AirPlay. We'll find a link to the Heifetz International Music Institute at Mary Baldwin College on the Spark page at WMRA.org. The Spark is a joint production of the WMRA Land Community and the staff of WMRA Public Radio. The Spark's theme music is supplied by the Avant Gardeners of Albemarle County. Terry Ward is our web wrangler. Thanks to Bob, Matt, and Terry for their help. And special thanks today to Tom Duvall for introducing me to Daniel Heifetz. And to Daniel Heifetz for fostering the sacred fire in the next generation of classical musicians. I'm Martha Woodruff. It has been a great pleasure to be with you.